This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan. Stand up in church, gonna testify, gonna tell all my friends and my neighbors what a changed man am I. I got something to say, got a story to tell.
Welcome to episode 98 of Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. I'm calling this episode The Girls from Wichita. My wife and I and our two dogs just returned from a trip to Texas and Kansas. And while we were there in Wichita, which is my wife's hometown, we were able to connect with a lot of people we hadn't seen in a long time. So this episode is an interview with a cousin of my wife. I call her my favorite cousin-in-law. She's one of my favorite people, and just a delight to talk to and laugh with. And she has an interesting story about her life as a flight attendant for many years. But then she talks about an encounter she had with a living God that changed her life forever. So I'm going to let my wife introduce our guest tonight. But before we do that, I want to play a song that I wrote for the other girl from Wichita, my wife, Trish Tuning. I wrote this song when we were nearing our 40th wedding anniversary. And I just want to thank God for my wonderful wife. And I wrote this song to her called Love Song Just For You.
When I first knew that I loved you, at a time when we were young, I would often sit and ponder what our future might become. Looking back, I'm filled with wonder and a sense of gratitude. So allow me now to render a love song just for you. Sometimes my memories take me to a moment etched in time. You turned and kissed your father, then he placed your hand in mine. I had joy beyond measure when I took you for my wife. I knew I'd found a treasure to cherish all my life. I knelt and said a prayer beneath the autumn starlight when no one else was there. I prayed that I might find you, and I'm still filled with gratitude. So I sing this to remind you, it's a love song just for you. It's a love song just for you.
My wife Trish is now going to introduce our guest.
Growing up, my mother had my favorite aunt, who is Aunt Sue, who had a daughter, Winnie. The three were like the Three Stooges or the Three Musketeers. The best of friends, got into so many funny escapades, and were the great estate sale, garage sale people in the whole world that could find the best bargains. Their daughter, Lynn, who is now renamed Whitney, is a close cousin, more like a sister, that I grew up with in Wichita. She has an amazing testimony. I am so thankful that all of her family came to the Lord and that she has a real walk with Jesus. So this is Wynn Whitney, or Lynn Denweiler.
Wow, what an introduction.
Yes.
Man.
Hello, Lynn. Whitney.
Whitney.
What's her name?
I know. It's Whitney Denweiler from Wichita,
Kansas. I was not going to say any other name but Whitney.
Okay.
But you are the other girl from Wichita that I love dearly. And I've talked on this show about my cousins. But you are my cousin-in-law, and you are one of my favorite people. I mean that.
I know. You have always said that.
Yep. Now, we're going to talk about your life. Your cousin Trish, who introduced you, she has this thing about the show. We don't ever have famous people on here.
Okay.
So she says this is extraordinary stories from ordinary people. That's what she calls it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you have an extraordinary story,
okay,
but I want to laugh a little bit first.
Okay.
Before we get really serious.
Okay.
I met you when you were 11 years old. I figured it out. You were 11. And I'd want to apologize for that. I think your cousin and I may have corrupted you at an early age.
Okay.
Inadvertently. Your folks and you came to see us in Massachusetts, and they wanted to go to Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't overjoyed with Cape Cod or the drive there, so we said, leave her at our house.
Okay.
We took you to see Grease.
Really?
We did.
You were okay, keep going.
And I'm sitting there. We wanted to be a great influence on our younger relative. And we watched the story of Olivia Newton-John, who goes from this wonderful, nice, pure girl. At the end, she's walking around with a cigarette dangling out of her mouth and these tight-fitting clothes. And that was a great climax to the movie, that she turned bad. And everybody cheered. And I thought, here we are.
Okay.
We're taking our young cousin here, and we've introduced her to cigarettes.
And worse than that.
And worse than that.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's not when you corrupted me. But please, continue on with your story.
Okay, so that very day we introduced you to Grease.
Yes.
You spent the night with us.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And we gave you and your mom and dad the upstairs.
Yes.
And we had a little bed in the downstairs.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you found another record devoted to John Travolta, Saturday Night Fever, with the Bee Gees. And Trish and I were trying to go to sleep, and she said, the floor is just squeaking. It's just squeaking and making these noises. And we could see the floorboards. The floor is rattling. And you were dancing.
Yes.
All over the house. Your parents weren't there.
Oh, yeah, jumping up and down.
You found Saturday Night Fever, double album, and put it on, and you were all over the house. But we corrupted you in another way.
But, Lawrence, I have to tell you, you said that we met when I was 11 years old. So I am 57 now, and I still do that.
Oh.
I put on an album, and I just dance and jump up and down. So
good for you.
That's embarrassing.
Why is it embarrassing? We thought it was cute.
Okay.
Okay. But there's another time that happened, and I know this may be what you're talking about, corrupting.
Yes.
You rode with us to Denver.
And we had to make a potty break.
We made a potty break, and I had this addiction to Coca-Colas.
Yeah.
Which I don't have anymore. But I was dying for a Coca-Cola,
That's right.
The only place there was a bar. So I sneaked in the bar. And your folks know I'm a pastor, you know?
Uh-huh.
And
you took me to my first bar.
I didn't. You followed me in. I looked around and you were there.
You took me. You held the door open. And I just walked in.
But didn't your folks see you walk out with me at the bar? Or was it her
mom
and dad?
That doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your aunt said, I can't believe you did this. You took went a 13-year-old into a bar.
That's right.
It was more like a saloon, if I remember right.
Yeah.
So is that where I corrupted
you? Yes, that's where you corrupted me.
So here we are 57 years later.
Uh-huh.
No, 40.
No. Yeah.
46 years later.
Yeah.
And we're talking about God.
Uh-huh.
So, you were born in Wichita, right?
Correct.
And tell my crowd about your profession for many years.
I grew up in the church. My parents went to church as long as I can remember. I was there when the doors opened. It was Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday night. I just didn't know anything different. I like to call that growing up in the fishbowl. I even went on to go to a Christian college. There was just no substance to that.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Did you, what we call accepting Christ, being saved, did you have an experience with the Lord as a child?
I bet you don't know this story. So, yes, I knew that I needed to do something. I was probably 12 years old because all of my friends were getting baptized.
Okay.
And so, you know, it was just what we did. Like I stated that there really wasn't any substance. It was just, that was what I knew.
Okay.
And we had a guest speaker come in. It was all that week, and this was a Friday. And I said, I'm thinking about doing this. And so Friday comes, and this is the last one. And I said, I'm going to get baptized. And I get up, I go down front, and he says that, you know, the Norman, do you believe that Jesus is, you know, the Son of God and the Holy Spirit and God the Father? And I said, yes, I do. And so they take me back. And now, back then, we had these big terry cloth robes.
Terry cloth?
Yes, they were terry cloth. And when they
that
got
was handy. It's
wet,
like a towel.
Yes, but when they got wet, they were heavy. Now, you and I were talking earlier today, and I told you I don't swim. Well, so I go down in the water, and our pastor says, this is what I'm going to do. When they open up the curtain, I will say, you know, you'll make your confession, and then I will dunk you. So he gets time. The time is now. He takes my hand, puts it over my mouth. He proceeds to dunk me. And I don't know what was on the bottom of that baptismal floor, but I slipped. And I slipped out of his arms through my robe, so it comes kind of over my head. And I raise up out of the water thinking that I'm going to heaven now because I'm going to drown. And I pull that down, and he's looking at me like, honey, what have you just done? And I look out, I turn to look at the audience, and they're looking at me. And instead of, you know, clapping and saying amen, they're stunned and their mouths are just open. So that's my, every time somebody gets baptized, I get a little PTSD. I'm like, okay. Oh, come up alive.
So the terry cloth was over your head
yes,
when you came up?
Yes. And I had to pull it down.
I hope you had clothes underneath.
They gave us underwear, and they were the biggest granny panties.
Wow. So you're about 12 years old.
Yes.
Okay, I want to talk about your job.
Okay.
But let's follow on out. You went to a Christian college.
I went to a Christian college.
What was it?
Oklahoma Christian University.
Okay. And
ask me what my major was.
I was going to.
Okay.
What was your major?
Mortuary science. I wanted to be a mortician.
Amazing.
I know, you're speechless.
I know.
I know.
Wow.
Okay. But I didn't end up doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know that.
Okay.
So did you finish college there?
No, I just went 2 years. I had way too much fun. I'm not telling you that I flunk out, but let's just say that in the yearbook, my goal was to see how many times I could get my picture in it. So I have quite a few numbers after my name.
All right. So what town is that university in?
Edmond, Oklahoma.
Edmond.
Outside of Oklahoma City.
We passed through Edmond on the way here.
Yes.
So
You went 2 years to college, and mm-hmm. did you go straight into your career after that?
As a flight attendant?
Yeah.
No. I cut hair. I was a hairdresser for 3 years.
Okay.
So I did that. So a good friend of mine said, I think you should be a flight attendant.
We're not going to say the name of the airline, but a major airline.
Yes, a major airline. One of the three majors.
Very big major.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know a thing about this job. So how much of schooling, training did you have to go through?
Oh, it's 6 weeks. You
Six
don't
weeks.
Go into it having to have any background in travel agency or, you know. Now, I was talking to another lady who's getting ready to apply. They really want you to know a second language. They want you to have EMT experience or paramedic. I was like, well, holy cow, I didn't have to know any of that. So
do you remember your first flight?
Kinda. It was uneventful.
Were you ever afraid?
Yes. On that first flight?
On any of them?
Yeah, because we had some emergency landings. But you said, were you ever afraid? And no, because your training always kicks in.
Okay.
It's after that it hits you that, oh my gosh, I could have died.
Okay, were you a flight attendant around the time 9/11 happened?
Yes.
Right? You were?
Yes. I was not flying that day. I was actually at home. This is kind of a good story. I was at home, and because I was going to what we call jet recurrent the next day. That's where you have to go every year to go over your first aid, your doors, how to work them. And I was watching the Today Show, so I watched it just like everybody else, you know, on TV. And then my phone started ringing. And at the time, I was dating a guy that was one of our customer representatives. And so he calls, and at that time, he said, we think it's our airline. And I would have known because the planes flew out of Boston. That happened to be a trip that was, you know, one of our trips. And I knew the crew on that flight. So I would have known the crew that was on that flight that had hit the Trade Center. And so I'm trying to find out if it's my particular airline and just the stress, the trauma that really impacted me by watching that. And I lived in, you know, this major city, and it was amazing how quiet the skies became when they grounded everything.
Yeah.
That was what was so eerie to me.
Everything came to a standstill for several days, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't your airline.
No. So now the people are probably going to figure out which airline?
No, they don't, because most people don't know what airline it was.
Okay.
I remember you told me you saw that movie about the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Let's Roll.
And that affected you.
Oh, I didn't know just because I was on the ground. But because I thought I knew the crew, it did something to me emotionally. And so when I watched that, I saw it at the movie theater. I actually had to leave because I started crying, and it was becoming the ugly cry to where it was like, and then it got, you know, years later I would watch a movie or a documentary, and I would still have that hyperventilating, the anxiety, almost panic attack because of the events.
Okay. What was it like when they gave the okay, now let's get on the plane and start flying again? Was that, I mean, did you have like a greater fear than you'd ever had before?
Right. It was 2 weeks later. We were actually grounded for 2 weeks. During that 2 weeks, they had the FBI come in and train us because it no longer... you know, it was to comply with the terrorist. Everything was, you know, learning, you know, Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, do everything they ask. And it had turned from that to you do everything you can to protect that cockpit. So they taught us defensive moves. They taught us how to remove a gun from somebody, the knife. It was pretty cool training. So you go into the skies having that kind of a defense. They had taken the knives off the airplanes, so you didn't have anything. So we didn't have anything to cut up the lemons and limes. You know, it was like, well, what are we supposed to do here? So the whole job
had changed.
How
did you do it? How did you cut the lemons?
You know, finally they were like, well, we'll have to cut them and then, you know, have them already boarded.
So you did this for how many years?
Almost 20 years. I flew for, I'll tell this airline. My first airline was TWA. And then I went on and got hired to my next one.
So 20 years.
Yes.
What's the longest flight you ever were on?
Japan. Going to Japan.
From California?
Yes. It was long.
Did you ever get bored?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you ever deal with bratty kids?
And no, it's just the people. What's so funny is you do those international flights, and we would pull the card out, and then we would have to restock it, and before you know it, we're pulling it back out, and I'm like, how much can these people drink? You know, it's like, gosh, you just had something. So that was always my thought.
Okay, silly question.
Okay.
I read recently that there was one brand of soda that the flight attendants hate.
Diet Coke.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, what is it about Diet Coke that was so bad?
Because we don't have time for that fizz to come down because we can't give you the whole can. You know, now it's we're cutting cost. So we have to stand there and pour that Diet Coke.
So how's that different than a Coke? Fizzy. So,
it's the altitude, and it actually fizzes up more. You know, the
I read that. The flight attendants hated it when people
ate Diet Coke.
Well, they didn't like me, did they, Trish? I've ordered many of them.
That's right.
So that's really true, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you do what all of them have done to me? Did you bump the people with the tray as you went down the aisle? Every time I sit on an aisle seat, I get bumped every time.
Were your legs sticking out in the aisle?
No, then yes. My shoulder was.
Okay, yes. That is our space.
Yeah. Okay, how did you deal with drunks?
You know, I didn't ever have any just unruly drunks. Now, I had, this is one of my favorite. So I had this guy who we had landed, we're taxiing in, and it is an FAA regulation that you cannot stand up while the plane is in motion, while it's moving.
Yeah.
And this guy gets up and he is coming to the back of the airplane. And so I had this young flight attendant beside me and she gets on the PA and she's like, ladies and gentlemen, it is an FAA regulation. You must be seated. Sir, sit down. Sir. You need to, and he keeps coming. He keeps coming. And she's on there, sir, go back to your seat. And I'm just watching him. And I'm going, this is not good. And he comes to the back. And right before he gets to me, I reach up, I grab both lavatory doors. I pull open the doors and he goes in there and goes, bleh, as he throws up. I look over at the girl, and she's got the mic in her hand, and she's like, And I said, honey, if somebody is going to throw up on me, FAA just goes out the door. So that's really the only really bad drunk story.
I heard a story about a guy who was really grumpy and really looked like a really violent guy, and he told this little skinny guy sitting by him, I don't want to be disturbed when I'm sleeping. And he kind of threatened him.
Yeah.
You've probably heard this. And so they had some turbulence while the tough guy was sleeping.
Sure.
And the skinny guy threw up all over the tough guy while he was asleep. And he thought, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
So when the guy woke up, he says, do you feel better?
Gross.
You retired.
Yes.
From the airline industry.
Yes.
And
Did I retire?
I don't know.
Okay. Because that's pretty important.
And,
how many
years ago did you retire?
I retired from, I almost said the name. I retired in 2006. That's when I moved home.
Okay. Okay.
I moved home because my parents were getting older.
Yeah.
And I was really not happy with my job. 9/11 really changed that industry. The flying public is mean. There's so many rules and stipulations put on that I would say even the flight crew becomes a little on edge. So it's both sides. And like the being a barber, a hairdresser, if my job wasn't fun, it was time to leave. So I used to say the moment I became a grumpy old flight attendant, it was time to quit.
Well, you've always been fun. So
thank you.
I like this credo, as they call it.
Yeah.
So you left the industry to come and take care of
I moved home.
You know how much we loved your mom and dad.
Yeah.
Wonderful people.
Yeah.
Your mom's has the same birthday as me.
Yes.
So let's talk about God now for back to God. Uh-huh. You were baptized at 12 years old.
At 12 years old.
And you said that's kind of all you knew.
Yes, that's all I knew.
So did you not have a personal relationship with the Lord?
No.
Okay.
And I can honestly say that because it was just what's the next step? What's the...
But you still went to church your whole
life. I did because it's all I knew.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll just say that's where my social came from, was church. I was never for the bar scene. You know, I had fun. I went to bars, but that was never my deal. Yeah. So I always found a church that had a strong group, and that's where I really connected with.
Okay, several years ago, this might have been... it might have been when your mom died, but I think it was before one of the trips we were out here.
Okay.
You sat down with Dan and I, my brother-in-law, your cousin.
Yeah.
And you shared your story, and I was absolutely stunned because I never knew that you went through the dark night of the soul that you went through. You always... Whatever you went through, you hit it well.
Sure.
Because you were always seemed to be happy and fun-loving. You always have been fun-loving.
Right.
But when you shared your story, it just absolutely floored me. And it's a powerful story. So I'm going to shut up and let you talk.
Okay. Yeah, it was a dark time. So... I wasn't coming out of it. And I happened to have, I was still flying at the time. And I remember being in the back of an airplane and I met this lady and I said, oh, what do you do for a living? And she said, well, I'm a school counselor. I'm actually a suicide prevention counselor. And I said, really? And so I, with that really, I was very purposeful in this next question, but I said, what do you look for when somebody is, you know, going to commit suicide or they, you know, they're down? And she said, well, weight loss, you know, you kind of quit eating. You don't have an appetite. You separate yourself. You, different things that you look for. And I started doing the opposite of everything that she said so that nobody would know. And so one day...
Wow. So you were kind of...
Yes.
Before you were kind of meeting that criteria.
Yeah.
And so to hide it...
So that nobody would know. And so the day, you know, I didn't have a reason why I picked the day, but I
started. So, in other words, you had decided to end your life.
Yes. This was going to be it.
It wasn't just thoughts you had. You were.
No, this was, I'm done. And so I had cleaned my house purposefully so that when they came in, the police came in. This is where how sick your mind can be and how you just, you're not thinking straight. I didn't want the police to think I was a bad housekeeper. So, you know, I mean, it's just those silly things.
So I'm not trying to interrupt you, but did you think about how this would affect your mom and dad?
No, not at all.
So you didn't really think about the consequences to other people?
No, not at all.
Okay.
So in my circumstance, I mean, it was a very selfish, self-absorbed act. So.
So would you sink into these deep, deep times where you didn't think there was a way out?
You know, I really wasn't thinking about that. I was just sad.
Yeah.
I wasn't, you know, thinking I need help. I may not have wanted help.
Were you living in you weren't living in Wichita.
No, I'm living in Texas.
Okay, mm-hmm. So back to your story. You were planning the date.
Yes. I'm sitting on my bed. I had a gun. It was going to be by gun because I'm living in Texas. I'm doing the Texas thing, and I have country music on the radio. And it was low. It was, you know, it wasn't loud. And I...
Is it at night or daytime?
It's at night. And so I'm sitting on my bed, and my dresser is across from me, and I had a big mirror. And I'm looking at myself. I'm going to watch myself in my life. And so I look over, I grab the gun, and I'm looking at it. Now, I'm not holding it up to my, you know, below my chin or anything like that, but I am just, I'm looking at it, and I know that it is close. What is so ironic is I have never heard this song since on the radio, but
country music radio.
Yes. I'm listening to country music.
Yeah.
And somehow, some way, we know how that is.
Yeah.
It turns to K-Love and Dennis Jernigan, his song, A Precious Jewel.
You Are My All in All.
Yeah. You Are My All in All comes on. And it was that inner voice that said, not now. And it it shocked me because, you know, I knew that song. You know, I'd listened to Christian music. I knew that song, but it was like, how did that change?
That's an incredible story.
Yeah, like I said, I've never heard his music on K-Love since.
So you hear that song.
I hear that song, and I put the gun down. My whole spirit changed. And so the next day, I actually went out to breakfast with a good friend of mine, and I told her that was June 24th, and I said, today is the first day of the rest of my life.
So what year?
I don't remember. I know I am not a dates person.
But you know the month and the day.
Yes, I can tell you. And I, you know, June 24th comes around and I don't remember. I don't go back to that. But I'll never forget that day.
Okay, so did you have an encounter with, did you pray after that? Did you give your heart to Jesus after that? Or?
No, it just... My spirit had lifted. My attitude had changed. It wasn't for several years later that truly my relationship with the Lord came to where it is today. We're talking years.
So what was the circumstances behind that?
No, good grief. these men, another man enters my life, probably the love of my life. And he changed my life because I saw how he was in his relationship with the Lord. And I had never been taught that. That's where not all churches, but I believe that's where a lot of churches fail us today. They don't teach the relationship.
Yeah.
They're very good at teaching knowledge, but the Holy Spirit and his involvement. And so with he actually paid me to quit my job so that I could stay home and study the Word. So it turned into be 5 years that I got to find out what Whitney truly believed. And it started my relationship of asking the Lord, okay, who are you? And what do I believe? Are you real? And so I started answering that question. And it grew from there. So now, anytime I read the Bible, I open it up, I go and expect him to speak to me.
That's great.
So and that's how when I now mentor young women, and instead of just saying read your Bible and pray more, I go, come expecting to hear the Lord.
And you actually bring them into your home.
Yes, I bring them into my home.
They live with you.
Teach them how to do life because life can be hard. So I have I've retired. I come home. So I actually went back to school for a counseling certificate. I am not a doctor. I'm not a licensed, per se. But the school that I went to taught counseling, Christian counseling, using the Bible. And my whole philosophy is, what is the truth? Because Satan will come and steal your thoughts. So in every down moment, I'm like, what is the truth?
Did your parents ever find out how dark things got
for
you? They never did.
No.
So I know they're both in heaven now.
Yeah.
That's a powerful story.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm asking, though, is was there a moment when you said, Jesus, come into my life? Or was it a gradual awakening kind of a thing?
Let's see. I believe that when I got baptized, it was for the correct reason.
Okay.
So that was when I was like, Lord, I'm yours, you know. Now, I did have a moment through that I call going to the desert, that period that was over 5 years, that I said, I'm yours. I am turning my life over to you. So whatever you ask. So I would say really that was the changing moment was when I said, whatever you want.
It's a big difference, isn't it?
No, it is. It is.
Yeah, I was preaching a week or two ago at my church that some of the most miserable people are those who have just enough of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's like fire insurance.
Sure.
To get them out of hell, but they don't understand the friendship.
Uh-huh.
A friendship
with
God.
Surrender.
Yeah.
To the Lordship of Christ.
My sweetheart, come over here and bring your chair over. My wife, who is your...
My cousin.
Your cousin.
My second cousin.
Your second cousin.
Yeah.
I like what you told me about your professor that said about the questions.
Yeah. First day of school.
Hang on. I'm going to have my wife sit at this chair, right?
Okay. First day of school, he said, okay, Jesus is the answer. So what's your question? And I looked at him and I was like, what in the world are you talking about? And so for the next 2 years, I was looking to prove him wrong. And I could never prove him wrong. Now, Lawrence, you said we were going to laugh. So tell your joke.
We told the jokes earlier. I told the joke about the guy throwing up on the...
No! The tree! There's, okay, I got a question for you. In the tree is...
Okay,
yeah.
Here's the joke. Because he said Jesus is the answer.
Yes, Jesus is
What's
the answer.
The question? There was a Sunday school teacher teaching the little kids, and the class, the kid had gone to Sunday school, heard all the right answers and all. So she says, today we're going to talk about God's creation. God created all the animals, all the plants. So tell me about God's creation. This creation has a fluffy tail. It can climb trees, and it eats acorns. Silas, one little boy, raised his hand, and he said, I know the answer is Jesus, but it sure sounds like a squirrel to me. So
yeah, I wish I'd been quick and said, no, you're wrong. So,
you got any questions for your cousin? Any comments?
Not we're putting you on the spot.
You didn't know the story, did you?
Some of it.
Yeah.
From the worst moment of your life to now,
uh-huh.
How would you describe your life in Jesus?
I am living my best life ever.
You're listening to a podcast called Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host.
Living room. tears streaming down my face. Life was such a waste. Then I met you.
You chose to be single. Not that you always wanted it.
Well,
that
I think
way.
It just happened.
Okay.
But later, I chose.
You are single.
Yes. Never been married.
And I would assume, if you're like a lot of people, you went through some struggles with that at earlier points in your life.
Yeah.
But you have come to a place of great peace now.
Absolutely.
It's obvious.
Yeah.
Just talking to you.
Yeah.
So you were telling us earlier about an experience you had with visiting a church.
Yeah.
A friend of yours is a pastor.
Yeah. One of my best friends, her husband is a pastor. And I went to go visit them the weekend, and I thought, well, I'll just stay for church. Well, I'm not even thinking. It was a holiday, and the holiday was Mother's Day.
So, and let me just bump in here.
Okay.
The dream wasn't just to be a wife, but you really desired to be a mother.
Yeah. I wanted kids. I wanted to be the house that, I have to tell you this. So I wanted to be the house that all the kids came over and played. At one time, I lived in Texas, and that was true. I was the house that the kids played in. And so my brother, which would be naturally, that he said, if something happens to me, I want you to take, you know, Evan and Lauren. And I said, absolutely. Well, my best friend, who I'm getting ready to talk about, they had three kids. And they said, if anything, we're going to, you know, we're doing our will and all that. If anything happens to us, will you take our kids? Absolutely. I'm living in Texas. And my neighbors, two of them, come up to me and said, if anything happens to me, we want you to take our kids. If everybody had died, I would have had 11 kids. Scared the peewads out of me. So everybody is still living. I'm good. So, okay.
Are the kids grown now?
Yes, okay. They're all good. I'm safe. It's like, So I go, it's the weekend, it's time for church, and it's Mother's Day weekend.
It's another state you went to.
Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what's so bad about that? Well, the sermon is going to be geared toward mothers, and I'm not a mom. I'm not even married. Well, he, not knowing that this day would change my life, in my thinking forever. He had different parts, the ladies stand up. So at this time it was the grandmothers. And he said, you know, you are the matriarchs of the family. And so what you bring and your influence and the importance of that, and he goes into details about them. He has them sit down, and then he has the mothers that have older kids. And then he said something to them, you know, what their job was. And then he had, you know, mothers that are, you know, newborn. And so it goes on down the line. And I'm just kind of sitting here and I'm just going, well, you know, I'm just going to be sitting here because one, I'm not married. And two, I don't have kids. So really, what good am I? The very last, he said, now I want those of you who are a little older. Now, mind you, I was, you know, early 30s, late 20s. So, you know, I'm not that old, but I'm getting to the age where I'm getting a little older. And he says, I want you to stand up. And so I stand up because I don't have kids. He said, you're the special ones. You're the important ones because you're the spiritual mother over all of these kids. And that's what your job is to bring that spiritual guidance to all children. And, you know, that has never left me. And to this day, I take that to heart, that all kids are my kids.
And you have mentored women who were probably kids at that time.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
They're just growing up now.
So
good for you.
So, yeah, I've never, the longing to have children or that biological clock was never a big issue with me. I truly took that to heart.
So you don't feel second class?
No, not at all.
A lot of people need to hear that.
So.
A lot of people need to hear what you said.
Yeah, I think that's what really helped me to go through life, is never looking at my situation as something wrong. You know, what's wrong with me? Instead, what's right?
You're a great American. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for joining our show tonight. I want to thank our guest, Whitney Denweiler, for her moving testimony and just for the person she is. I also want to thank the other wonderful girl from Wichita, my wife, Trish. Hope you'll join us next week.
My 88 friends, I will see you.